Welcome back to the Hawks Talk podcast, your source for everything about the Upper Valley Nighthawks and the NECBL. This is Season 3, Episode 10, First Impressions. I'm your host, Phoebe Winters, joined by co-hosts Caitlin Beal and Greg Fennell. Caitlin, Greg, how are we doing today?
Ready for ball. I'm absolutely ready for ball. After a weekend of nothing but rain, it's time to get started, and I'm really looking forward to it.
No, definitely. I think... The Vermont weather coming in and it being just rain and rain and rain. I'm definitely excited for summer ball and for it to feel like summer ball.
The unfortunate thing is that you get first impressions that this is a place that's normally very wet, very rainy, which is not always necessarily the case. Now, we've had some summers, I think two of the last three summers, we've had at least 10 to 11 postponements because of the weather. So I guess it's just whatever cycle you get in. But living in here, this part of the country, as long as I have, you realize that all you got to do is blink your eyes and things are going to change. So, yeah, we got drenched on Saturday, but everything will be dried out. And especially given the fact that the opening game is at a stadium where at least part of the field is artificial turf, we should be off and get a couple in here before the next time Mother Nature decides to dump on us.
I mean, it was definitely encouraging driving over to the studio this morning, seeing blue skies, a bright sun. I was like, okay, this feels like summer weather, you know, not seeing any rain. But I wanted to ask you guys, it's our first day in the studio. We're finally getting to see the studio space. What are your guys' impressions?
This is cool. I mean, I didn't even know this was here. I was vaguely familiar with some of the stuff that Jam does through videos they've done with past players and things like that. I didn't know they had an audio studio down here. I was remarking before to my wife that the last time I was in here, upstairs was the offices for the Visiting Nurse Alliance of Vermont and New Hampshire, and my mother-in-law worked there. So we're talking a good 30 years. This place has been a district court, became VNA. Now JAM has taken over some of it. The Center for Cartoon Studies has taken over some of it. I like this. I mean, I could have some fun playing down here.
Yeah, definitely. This feels very official. I mean, pretty much the entire time we've been doing the podcast, we've been saying how excited we are to finally be in the studio, and here we are. So hopefully you guys are enjoying like the better quality. We'll have some videos, and hopefully we can get a little more creative with it now that we're finally all together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping so. I mean, I'm feeling like Alex Cooper over here.
Oh my gosh, yes. We even have a couch, so maybe some days we'll do the podcast from the couch. That would feel very, very official.
I think especially once we start getting more players on, mm-hmm. Give that more casual vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
But I'd say all around, first impression of the studio is definitely very positive.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin, yesterday we got to see Maxfield Sports Complex for the first time to start doing our run-throughs before the first game. What did you think about the field and how the first run-through went?
Yeah, it was definitely cool to see the field for the first time. I mean, because with pictures, it's always hard to tell, especially when we're setting up all the cameras and everything. You can't really get a good feel for it, but it is exciting. They were updating a lot of our equipment this year, but at the same time, everything needs to be set up from scratch. And so there was definitely a lot of technical difficulties yesterday that we're going to work through today. Thankfully, we got, I think, the worst of it done, mm-hmm. thanks to the help of some other people from broadcast across the league. So thank you to you guys. But yeah, we need to make sure that all the cameras are showing up on our feeds, because we got some new cameras this year, actually courtesy of JAM Studio. Mm-hmm. So we definitely need to make sure all of that is working today, but it was definitely good to meet everyone in person. And, you know, it seems like it's going to be a good year. Yeah.
I know we're going to be talking about it more on the podcast here, but here's another benefit of not having a home game for a week. Now you got all this time to work through the electronics, mm-hmm. and especially given that broadcast on ESPN Plus are going to require probably a higher level of audio and video than maybe we're used to in doing this via Zoom. Now you've got one more benefit aside from getting to see mm-hmm. parts of New England this week.
No, I'm definitely excited. I mean, first off, huge shout out to Ryan Hearn of the
Yes, thank you, Ryan.
He was our savior yesterday to fill you in, Greg. Mm-hmm. We were just struggling so much with the new equipment. As Caitlin said, it's brand new. It's all ESPN regulated so that every team in the NECBL now has the same equipment. So thankfully, we were able to rely on other broadcast crews around the NECBL for some help to set it up. I'm definitely very excited to go back today and actually do like a full run through. Mm-hmm. I think we're definitely feeling a lot more confident with the equipment, having it all set up. Our producer, Brendan Boland, he was working so hard yesterday. I'm like actually so glad he was there and willing to put in the time and the work to troubleshoot everything. But I think going into today, we should get everything working. It'll be smooth. And like you said, we do have a week before that first home game, Saturday, June 7th, and it'll actually be available on ESPN Plus for the fans at home that want to tune into the game. But before they make that home debut, they're going to hit the road for three away games. First up is at Fraser Field against the North Shore Navigators. Now, Greg, I'm not sure if you've been to Fraser Field before, but what should Caitlin and I and the fans kind of expect from going to North Shore?
Strangely enough, Fraser Field is one of the places in the league that my wife and I have yet to go to. So I can't really speak from experience in that regard. But I was researching a little bit. I find it kind of interesting to look at some of the facilities that the other teams play in this league. And Fraser Field is one of the few in the NECBL that you could call a stadium. Maybe Goodall Park in Sanford could be another one. Here's a place that if anybody who's familiar with Holman Stadium in Nashua, New Hampshire, and for folks up in this part of the country, about the only time that you would experience Holman is maybe if you were chasing Lebanon Post 22 down for the State American Legion playoffs. But they're similar in that they were both built in the early 1940s, Works Progress Administration projects directly out of the Great Depression. So they have some similarities in structure and similarities in their use. Both were ballparks that have hosted minor league baseball in the past. In fact, they had franchises, the Red Sox in Lynn and the Dodgers in Nashua, that played each other at one point, either in the 40s or the 50s. And there are some familiar players to old cranks like me who've read about this, not seen it in person, but Don Newcomb, Jackie Robinson, Roy Campanella, those days for the Dodgers, got their early professional experiences in Nashua. Lynn is an interesting field in that I believe the infield is artificial turf, but the outfield is grass. I don't think I've seen that anywhere. I mean, some of the games I've been watching on the NCAA tournament, you might find a place that's grass in the playing surface and maybe artificial in foul territory. I think I've seen that at least once. But it's a place that has hosted a little bit of minor league baseball, but mostly youth baseball, college, and, of course, the Navigators first in the Futures League and now for, I think, about 5-6 years in the NECBL. Their teams tend to be fairly good, fairly competitive, and Fraser is the site of Upper Valley's last success, or at least deepest penetration in the NECBL playoffs 3 years ago when they got to the semifinals before the combination of lack of healthy bodies and some lousy weather. There's that theme again. Finally ended the season. So it's a good place to start. Got to start somewhere. So, you know, let's get the two-hour road trip in.
Yeah. Speaking of that two-hour road trip and kind of preparing for the first road game, we have a special guest. Head coach Matt Paws is going to join us on the podcast to kind of preview what the Nighthawks can look forward to for their first road game. Matt, welcome back to the podcast. We're so excited to have you back on. How are you doing today?
Doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. Excited to get the in-person podcast rolling and actually be here in Vermont for the actual season. So tomorrow, big day for the Nighthawks. It's going to be their first game of the 2025 season. What are going to be your primary focuses as you prepare for tomorrow's game?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, we started practice yesterday, filming on a Monday, so we'll practice again tonight. And mainly just trying to figure out the guys, you know, trying to learn everyone's name, fitting faces to names, stuff like that, you know, takes a few days. So it's good just to kind of get together. You know, I think the biggest thing for us right now is, you know, trying to get everyone here. As of right now, you know, we have our roster is a little thin, just because, you know, we still have some guys playing, some guys are coming a couple days late. So hopefully by, you know, the weekend, we'll have more guys here, to help, you know, looking forward to tomorrow and Wednesday, specifically just making sure, you know, we have guys in the right spot, and making sure our pitching staff is, you know, set for the week. That's one thing we talked about yesterday, and Max and I, our pitching coach, talk about a lot is making sure we're prepared with our arms, you know, especially not having a lot of arms here, making sure we plan ahead and are prepared with that. especially the first week. So those are some things we've kind of talked about and are kind of looking forward to, as we head into the week. Overall, I think on paper, again, we've talked about before, like I really like our roster. We have a lot of guys who I think are going to be really good for us. We got a lot of pitchers who, will give us really good innings. So we're excited about that.
Now, as you mentioned, you had your first batting practice yesterday. Going into tonight's batting practice, what are you looking for to see, like, that the guys are prepared?
Yeah, same thing. Similar to last night, we just get guys some swings, get guys comfortable with being up here. We'll get some ground balls and stuff like that. Some guys, have only had a week off. Other guys have had a little longer. So trying to get their timing back in. I think, that's one of the things I've been doing this a while, and one of the things we see early on, especially, is guys, one, getting used to the wood bats, and two, just getting their timing back. Usually takes a few days or a few games. So the biggest thing today is, just getting guys swings, getting guys reads off the bat. And then obviously pitchers doing what they need to do to prepare for this week. But yeah, it'll be good. We're excited.
You kind of mentioned the wooden bat and that adjustment. Do you think that that's the biggest challenge the guys have to overcome in the first few days, or is it something else?
Yeah, I think, the wood bats definitely, you get the ball a little farther on the handle. You're not going to hit it as far as you would maybe with a metal bat. And then, like I kind of just touched on the timing piece, guys, like I said, some guys are different with, since the last time they played. So getting that timing back for a lot of guys, I think, is a big thing you see in the first week. And then pitchers just getting back into their routine. So I think overall, like I said, you start to see after the first week that guys start to feel a little more comfortable in game situations, and we continue to build from there.
So Matt, obviously a win would be nice, but going into tomorrow, what would you kind of define as a successful first game for the Nighthawks?
Yeah, I think, I think my expectations as far as playing well are the same now as they will be in July. So I think if we just go out there and, I told the guys yesterday my few expectations for the summer, right? We want them to be here. We want them to have a good time and develop. But when we step foot on the field during a game, I want to be competitive and I want to play the game the right way. So that's kind of what I'm looking for tomorrow. And then just the biggest thing, we talked about the timing piece and getting used to the wood bats, but just having good at bats, having a good approach, making sure we're on the same page with what pitches we can hit. We get data from our scouting department as to what the other guys look like from their college season. So, kind of using that and just preparing the guys in any way we can, I think will help. But yeah, so making sure guys are ready to go and ready when we get there, ready to play the game the right way. That's kind of what I'm looking for tomorrow. And then obviously always with our pitching staff is just, can we compete and throw strikes?
As you know, Matt, the roster is a constantly evolving thing, even as we're 24 to 48 hours away from the start of the season. Two questions. One, do you have any input on the guys who get selected for the team?
I do. I mean, Noah obviously does a lot of the kind of the background work as far as getting guys and stuff like that. He definitely asked for my input. There are guys on the roster that he'll just add. He's really good at finding guys who we want as an organization, whether it be skill wise or personality wise, that fits kind of what we're doing here. But we do. I mean, Noah and I communicate pretty much all year round as to when to add guys, what kind of guys we want to add, and kind of the last month has been kind of ramped up with, just filling out the roster. So like I said, I wouldn't say I'm actively, grabbing guys from different schools, but Noah and I communicate a lot on, what kind of guys we want and who's being added to the roster.
Second question I had, this is a team that historically has not tapped Dartmouth College for talent. I think maybe one player in the history of the Nighthawks has come from Dartmouth. You have three now. Two have been added very quickly. Nate Eisler has been there pretty much the whole time. Dartmouth's number one pitcher for most of the season. Now two more have been added, a pitcher in Joseph Chambers and a first baseman in Ethan Brown, who I believe was the team's MVP this year, or at least was one of their best offensive weapons. Are these guys who are going to be totally dedicated to baseball, or are these guys who are going to be splitting time between summer classes, doing their sophomore summer, so to speak, delayed or in advance?
Yeah, so as far as I know, I believe Ethan is in classes. As of right now, he's on a temp contract, so we'll have him at least for this week, and then kind of see how it goes from there. Once other guys get here from from playing in their college seasons. And then the two pitchers, right? I don't think they have any class stuff going on this summer. So they should be here full time. And I know they're finishing up finals this week. So that kind of, with the first week stuff, we've kind of had to work around that a little bit, which isn't a big deal, obviously. But as far as I know, our two arms should be good to go for the summer.
And you kind of mentioned scouting these teams you're facing this week. So going into North Shore tomorrow, is there anything specific you're looking at in terms of their playing that, the guys need to look out for or adjust specifically for them?
I think the biggest thing, and just looking through is, who their pitchers are, as they come into game. We try not to give, I mean, we have a bunch of different information that, we can utilize, specifically in game. I try not to, give our guys a lot of that information. I think for the most part, especially in summer ball, I want them to go out there and play. And I think the biggest thing with summer ball is, can we make adjustments in game and can we make adjustments day to day? So as far as tomorrow goes, just having their lineup of pitchers, just helpful information on what they're throwing, when they're throwing it, kind of the percentage of what pitches they throw, their strike percentages and what they throw in certain counts, I think at the very least would help, us as a staff, but also our players kind of just know what to expect. Specifically, a lot of guys they've probably never seen before, from a hitting perspective. So, and then same thing, kind of similarly with the, with the pitching staff is, I think more so communicating with the catcher as to what to throw in certain situations. That's one of the things I think is really important, specifically in summer ball, is we don't call our pitches. We have our catchers do that. So, Max working with our catchers, or it's me working with our catchers and kind of just communicating what to look for certain guys, I think is helpful. I think trying to make it so our pitchers don't have to think, as much as possible helps with that. So I think the communication with the catcher, and then the catcher can obviously call the game based on some information that we gave. Obviously it's important some pitchers to know kind of what each guy has, who they're facing. But again, trying to keep it so the guys don't have to think as much. They can just kind of go out there and play. And then from our end, we can kind of take care of that other stuff.
Now, going into tomorrow, we've got a 2-hour road trip ahead of us. We've already established you're a very big Taylor Swift fan. I'm curious to know, what are your top three songs for a road trip playlist?
So overall songs for a road trip playlist? I don't know. That's a tough question. So usually when I'm going on road trips, it's my wife that has the cord and the aux cord, and she's usually the one doing all the playing. Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough question. I honestly don't listen to a lot of music. I'm more of a podcast guy. So I listen to Section 10 podcast, which is a Red Sox podcast. And then I usually listen to there's a local Boston sports local radio show that I'll switch on. And then honestly on the road a lot too, I have my iPad, so I'll download some shows or some movies and turn that on. And then if the Wi-Fi is working, might throw on some baseball on the way home. So that's kind of what I entertain myself with on the bus.
So on the prep on the bus, are you trying to like distract yourself from the game? Or are you like getting in the zone? Are you kind of focusing on what you're going to do? What's kind of your vibe?
Yeah, so usually on the way there, it's I guess focusing on the game. I usually wait to do the lineup. If we're on a road game, I'll do the lineup, write the lineup out on the bus. So going through that stuff, looking at stuff from the night before. Obviously tomorrow we won't have that, but looking at stuff from the night before, and depending on how long the trip is, just I guess catching up on the scouting piece, if you want to call it that. I know this year, like I said, we have, new people in the analytic department. Franco does a really good job, so just working with him. And then yeah, on the way home, reflecting on the game, I guess. If there's any plans we have to make for the next day, and then, trying to flip on a show or something like that. Again, it kind of depends on how sometimes it depends on how the game went and how I'm feeling. And then obviously how long the bus ride is. Usually those longer bus rides try to flip something on. I don't sleep on the bus, so that's something I can't do.
So to prepare the players, how do you kind of stave off that bus fatigue as they get ready to get going and start playing? Do you have any things you require of the players on the bus?
Not really. I mean, I'll tell the guys tonight too. It's, you know, it's, I guess the expectations is, you know, how you kind of handle yourself on the bus at school. That's kind of how we want you to handle yourself on the bus here. Again, I understand it's summer ball, so I kind of let them do whatever they want as long as it's appropriate. I know on the way back, usually they're, you know, they're back there playing Mafia or playing whatever other games they like to do. So I'm obviously totally cool with all that. You know, I want them to have fun. That's I think that's one of the important pieces for just like the team bonding part. You know, we'll see tomorrow on the way home kind of what guys are doing. Usually it takes them a couple of days, but yeah, I want them to do all that stuff and have fun. You know, especially on the way home. It's and I understand, you know, it's summer ball, they want to have fun, they're, you know, meeting different people. So yeah, they can do whatever they feel they need to do.
It's so funny you mentioned Mafia because Phoebe was speculating since we're going to be on all the road games on the bus. She's like, I wonder if they're going to be playing Mafia the entire drive.
I'm willing to bet they'll definitely be playing Mafia. Some years there's been groups that play on the way to the game and on the way back. Other years there's been groups that just play on the way back. But I've been doing, like I said, I've been doing this a while, and pretty much every year they're back there playing Mafia. So.
Is that just like an easy game that like most people, like most college age guys know? I wonder why that's always the go-to.
I'm not sure. I think so. I think it's probably the easiest game to play on a moving bus. And I think I would assume that a lot of, you know, when they're at school, a lot of coaches probably don't want them playing Mafia. So when they get here, it's kind of just, yeah, an easy game they all know and they all enjoy. So.
Yeah, I'll have to brush up on the rules. I don't really
Even
remember
think
them.
I remember how to.
I get very confused on the rules very easily. So, Greg, did you have any other questions you wanted to ask?
I'm just looking forward to it. I don't know. Do you, Matt, look as forward to the start of summer ball as those of us who are flies on the wall are?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I get the baseball itch every year around, you know, January or February. Obviously right now I'm not coaching anything in the spring, so this is kind of all I do. So, you know, once we get to this time of the year, it's, you know, I'm geared up and ready to go. You know, and it's always exciting for me too, just to have a whole new group of guys. You know, our original roster, we had quite a few guys returning, but a lot of them have gotten hurt. So the majority of the guys we have here this summer are all new. So just getting to know new guys, and just trying to form that team dynamic as quickly as possible. You know, that's one of the things I enjoy most about summer ball is you got guys from all over the country coming together. And you know, obviously they want to develop and get better individually, but also we're a team. So trying to get the team camaraderie as quickly as possible. And that's one of the reasons why we kind of practice the first couple of days. And to be honest, I'm happy that you know, the past few years we've kind of have road games to start because I think that forces guys to get to know each other a little bit because we're all on a bus together for a certain amount of time. So that's what I look forward to the most on top of, you know, the baseball piece. You know, I'm a competitive guy and, you know, I love doing this. But that's what I look forward to the most is kind of just the new group to, you know, see how the dynamic works and see how I can, you know, use each guy's ability to help the team win.
Well, I think that's all we have for you today, Matt. Thank you again for coming on to the podcast. We're looking forward to the first game tomorrow. And of course, we'll see you at batting practice later today.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Have a good
Thank
time.
you. Bye.
Now I'd like to introduce former Nighthawks head coach and current assistant coach at Southern Mississippi, Keller Bradford. Keller, how are you doing?
I'm great. Really great after last night. So, got one more game today.
So you're kind of mentioning it already, but you guys are in the midst of the NCAA tournament. You guys just recorded an impressive win over Miami last night. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about this experience of coaching in the tournament and what that's been like for you?
There's nothing like it, obviously. You know, I've been here 4 years now. This is our fourth regional we've made, hosted, second one hosting, and actually we've made the regional final in all four regionals. So, I mean, you play all year, you work all year from August all the way through to now to June for this moment, for this experience, and the guys know that, they understand that, and just the culture here at Southern Miss of wanting that so bad and playing for that all year long is pretty special.
And so you guys had an impressive win last night, but you have another game against Miami tonight. What's kind of the mindset going into tonight's game?
It's all or nothing. It's like, I don't know if you've ever seen The Water Boy, but I always come back to Bobby Boucher looking at the broadcaster and saying, last game of the year, can't hold anything back. That's kind of the mindset right now. I mean, it's all hands on deck. Every pitcher is ready to go. Every hitter is ready to get in the box. So it is what it is.
Well, good luck tonight. Congratulations again on the win last night. But before you started coaching with Southern Miss, you were actually a coach for the Nighthawks. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience working with Upper Valley?
Oh, yeah. So I played there in, I think, 2017, and then obviously was a coach there in 2019. Great experience. I loved it up there in Vermont, living in the Vermont, New Hampshire area. It was great, great people. Noah Crane, who, you know, is the head of everything with the team, great guy. We still keep in touch pretty good. I still keep in touch with a lot of the players I played with, a lot of the players that I coached up there. Just a great all-around experience.
And that was your first time ever being a head coach in that summer. What did you learn from that experience?
I learned that I still had a lot to learn. That was my biggest takeaway is I think I was 24 years old. And we had a great summer. I mean, I think we, you know, won more games than we lost, which is good. Always the goal in summer ball. But it was, one of those summers where I went into it thinking, oh, well, you know, I've always wanted to coach. I know what I'm doing. And then you get halfway through the summer, I'm like, okay, there's a whole lot I need to go experience and a whole lot that I need to learn before I'm ready to do this full time successfully. So it was good for me for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Now you're back at your alma mater. Is that kind of a full circle moment for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I always wanted to play here growing up. My dad played here. This is always the school that I loved, that I always wanted to be at. So being able to coach or being able to play here and then being able to coach here, at a young age, I mean, I got here, I was 26 years old, and pretty special with unbelievable people. Scott Berry, who was the head coach here for 15 years, one of the best people on planet Earth. I got to coach with him for 2 years. And then Christian Ostrander is the head coach here now. Another just great human being. We spend a lot of time together at the field. We spend a lot of time together off the field as well. Just a great person to be around, and just a great school, a great environment, a great town full of great people.
You obviously have a personal history with the team. Southern Miss has a program history, both with the team and the league. Not only do you tend to send players up here, but you often send two or three down to Ocean State. There's usually one or two going down to the Cape League. What do you expect out of your players when you send them off for a summer baseball playing experience?
You know, it's great for them. One aspect of it is just being able to go get, you know, the reps, being able to go get the innings, get the at-bats, get the ground balls, all that kind of stuff. And at the end of the day, that's probably the most important thing. Most of the time, guys that we send off going to play in the summer maybe weren't everyday starters for us. They might have gotten some ABs, some innings, but we really want to send them off to go get better, to be able to come back and be able to earn a role for the next year. But the second piece to that is definitely just the maturity aspect, the experience aspect. Some guys, they just need to go get away from home. You know, they need to, they've been with mom and dad their whole life, and they get here and, you know, they're close enough to home to where it doesn't feel like they're really away yet. And, you know, being in Mississippi, sending somebody up to New Hampshire, Vermont for the summer, that's a pretty big gap. You know, that's 24 hours away from home, 25 hours away from home. You can't call mom and dad to come help you do this, to do that. You kind of got to figure it out for your own. And I know from my personal experience, that was a big turning point in my life and my career, as I got away from home and I was like, okay, it's time to grow up. It's time to be an adult now and maybe a better baseball player. So that's kind of part of it with them as well.
It seems like in almost all cases, it's only a one-shot deal. Guys go off to Upper Valley or Ocean State or wherever for that summer ball experience. It's going to be a little bit different for one guy this year. You're sending Kyle Culpepper back up your 4 second opportunity. Why for his case?
So with Cal, when he came in as a freshman, Cal went to a very, very small high school and was a great competitor, great athlete, all that kind of stuff, but still just had so much mentally he needed to learn and grow with as a freshman, and wasn't really ready to play at our level yet, was talented enough for sure, but wasn't ready to contribute. And there was a lot of physical, mechanical stuff that we worked really hard to change with him his freshman year. And then sending him up to Upper Valley last summer was like the first time that he got to really.
Welcome back to the Hawks Talk podcast, your source for everything about the Upper Valley Nighthawks and the NECBL. This is Season 3, Episode 10, First Impressions. I'm your host, Phoebe Winters, joined by co-hosts Caitlin Beal and Greg Fennell. Caitlin, Greg, how are we doing today?
Ready for ball. I'm absolutely ready for ball. After a weekend of nothing but rain, it's time to get started, and I'm really looking forward to it.
No, definitely.
Definitely.
I think.
Let me just.
The Vermont weather coming in and it being just rain and rain and rain. I'm definitely excited for summer ball and for it to feel like summer ball.
The unfortunate thing is that you get first impressions that this is a place that's normally very wet, very rainy, which is not always necessarily the case. Now, we've had some summers, I think two of the last three summers, we've had at least 10 to 11 postponements because of the weather. So I guess it's just whatever cycle you get in. But living in here, this part of the country, as long as I have, you realize that all you got to do is blink your eyes and things are going to change. So, yeah, we got drenched on Saturday, but everything will be dried out. And especially given the fact that the opening game is at a stadium where at least part of the field is artificial turf, we should be off and get a couple in here before the next time Mother Nature decides to dump on us.
I mean, it was definitely encouraging driving over to the studio this morning, seeing blue skies, a bright sun. I was like, okay, this feels like summer weather, you know, not seeing any rain. But I wanted to ask you guys, it's our first day in the studio. We're finally getting to see the studio space. What are your guys' impressions?
This is cool. I mean, I didn't even know this was here. I was vaguely familiar with some of the stuff that Jam does through videos they've done with past players and things like that. I didn't know they had an audio studio down here. I was remarking before to my wife that the last time I was in here, upstairs was the offices for the Visiting Nurse Alliance of Vermont and New Hampshire, and my mother-in-law worked there. So we're talking a good 30 years. This place has been a district court, became VNA. Now JAM has taken over some of it. The Center for Cartoon Studies has taken over some of it. I like this. I mean, I could have some fun playing down here.
Yeah, definitely. This feels very official. I mean, pretty much the entire time we've been doing the podcast, we've been saying how excited we are to finally be in the studio, and here we are. So hopefully you guys are enjoying like the better quality. We'll have some videos, and hopefully we can get a little more creative with it now that we're finally all together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping so. I mean, I'm feeling like Alex Cooper over here.
Oh my gosh, yes. We even have a couch, so maybe some days we'll do the podcast from the couch. That would feel very, very official.
I think especially once we start getting more players on, mm-hmm. Give it that more casual vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
But I'd say all around, first impression of the studio is definitely very positive.
Mm-hmm.
Caitlin, yesterday we got to see Maxfield Sports Complex for the first time to start doing our run-throughs before the first game. What did you think about the field and how the first run-through went?
Yeah, it was definitely cool to see the field for the first time. I mean, because with pictures, it's always hard to tell, especially when we're setting up all the cameras and everything. You can't really get a good feel for it, but it is exciting. They were updating a lot of our equipment this year, but at the same time, everything needs to be set up from scratch. And so there was definitely a lot of technical difficulties yesterday that we're going to work through today. Thankfully, we got, I think, the worst of it done, mm-hmm. thanks to the help of some other people from broadcast across the league. So thank you to you guys. But yeah, we need to make sure that all the cameras are showing up on our feeds, because we got some new cameras this year, actually, courtesy of Jam Studio. So we definitely need to make sure all of that is working today. But it was definitely good to meet everyone in person. And, you know, it seems like it's going to be a good year.
Yeah. I know we're going to be talking about it more on the podcast here, but here's another benefit of not having a home game for a week. Now you got all this time to work through the electronics, mm-hmm. and especially given that broadcast on ESPN Plus are going to require probably a higher level of audio and video than maybe we're used to in doing this via Zoom. Now you've got one more benefit aside from getting to see mm-hmm. parts of New England this week.
No, I'm definitely excited. I mean, first off, huge shout out to Ryan Hearn of the
Yes, thank you, Ryan.
He was our savior yesterday to fill you in, Greg. Mm-hmm. We were just struggling so much with the new equipment. As Caitlin said, it's brand new. It's all ESPN regulated so that every team in the NECBL now has the same equipment. So thankfully, we were able to rely on other broadcast crews around the NECBL for some help to set it up. I'm definitely very excited to go back today and actually do like a full run through. Mm-hmm. I think we're definitely feeling a lot more confident with the equipment, having it all set up. Our producer, Brendan Boland, he was working so hard yesterday. I'm like actually so glad he was there and yes. like willing to put in the time and the work to troubleshoot everything. But I think going into today, we should get everything working. It'll be smooth. And like you said, we do have a week before that first home mm-hmm. game, Saturday, June 7th, and it'll actually be available on ESPN Plus mm-hmm. for the fans at home that want to tune into the game. But before they make that home debut, they're going to hit the road for three away games. First up is at Fraser Field against the North Shore Navigators. Now, Greg, I'm not sure if you've been to Fraser Field before, but what should Caitlin and I and the fans kind of expect from going to North Shore?
Strangely enough, Fraser Field is one of the places in the league that my wife and I have yet to go to. So I can't really speak from experience in that regard. But I was researching a little bit. I find it kind of interesting to look at some of the facilities that the other teams play in this league. And Fraser Field is one of the few in the NECBL that you could call a stadium. Maybe Goodall Park in Sanford could be another one. Here's a place that if anybody who's familiar with Holman Stadium in Nashua, New Hampshire, and for folks up in this part of the country, about the only time that you would experience Holman is maybe if you were chasing Lebanon Post 22 down for the State American Legion playoffs. But they're similar in that they were both built in the early 1940s, Works Progress Administration projects directly out of the Great Depression. So they have some similarities in structure and similarities in their use. Both were ballparks that have hosted minor league baseball in the past. In fact, they had franchises, the Red Sox in Lynn and the Dodgers in Nashua, that played each other at one point, either in the 40s or the 50s. And there are some familiar players to old cranks like me who've read about this, not seen it in person, but Don Newcomb, Jackie Robinson, Roy Campanella, those days for the Dodgers, got their early professional experiences in Nashua. Lynn is an interesting field in that I believe the infield is artificial turf, but the outfield is grass. I don't think I've seen that anywhere. I mean, some of the games I've been watching on the NCAA tournament, you might find a place that's grass in the playing surface and maybe artificial in foul territory. I think I've seen that at least once. But it's a place that has hosted a little bit of minor league baseball, but mostly youth baseball, college, and of course the Navigators, first in the Futures League and now for I think about 5-6 years in the NECBL. Their teams tend to be fairly good, fairly competitive, and Fraser is the site of Upper Valley's last success, or at least deepest penetration in the NECBL playoffs 3 years ago when they got to the semifinals before the combination of lack of healthy bodies and some lousy weather. There's that theme again. Finally ended the season. So it's a good place to start. Got to start somewhere. So, you know, let's get the 2-hour road trip in.
Yeah. Speaking of that 2-hour road trip and kind of preparing for the first road game, we have a special guest. Head coach Matt Paws is going to join us on the podcast to kind of preview what the Nighthawks can look forward to for their first road game. Now I'd like to introduce former Nighthawks head coach and current assistant coach at Southern Mississippi, Keller Bradford. Keller, how are you doing?
I'm great. Really great after last night. So got one more game today.
So you're kind of mentioning it already, but you guys are in the midst of the NCAA tournament. You guys just recorded an impressive win over Miami last night. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about this experience of coaching in the tournament and what that's been like for you?
There's nothing like it, obviously. You know, I've been here 4 years now. This is our fourth regional we've made, hosted, second one hosting, and we've made the regional final in all four regionals. So, I mean, you play all year, you work all year from August all the way through to now to June for this moment, for this experience. And the guys know that, they understand that, and just the culture here at Southern Miss of wanting that so bad and playing for that all year long is pretty special.
And so you guys had an impressive win last night, but you have another game against Miami tonight. What's kind of the mindset going into tonight's game?
It's all or nothing. It's like, I don't know if you've ever seen The Water Boy, but I always come back to Bobby Boucher looking at the broadcaster and saying, last game of the year, can't hold anything back. That's kind of the mindset right now. I mean, it's all hands on deck. Every pitcher is ready to go. Every hitter is ready to get in the box. So it is what it is.
Well, good luck tonight. Congratulations again on the win last night. But before you start coaching with Southern Miss, you're actually a coach for the Nighthawks. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience working with Upper Valley?
Oh yeah, so I played there in I think 2017, and then obviously was a coach there in 2019. Great experience. I loved it up there in Vermont, living in the Vermont, New Hampshire area. It was great, great people. Noah Crane, who is the head of everything with the team. Great guy. We still keep in touch pretty good. I still keep in touch with a lot of the players I played with, a lot of the players that I coached up there. Just a great all around experience.
And that was your first time ever being a head coach in that summer. What did you learn from that experience?
I learned that I still had a lot to learn. That was my biggest takeaway is I think I was 24 years old. And I mean, we had a great summer. I mean, I think we, won more games than we lost, which is good. Always the goal in summer ball, but it was one of those summers where I went into it thinking, oh, well, I've always wanted to coach. I know what I'm doing. And then you get halfway through the summer, I'm like, okay, there's a whole lot I need to go experience and a whole lot that I need to learn before I'm ready to do this full time successfully. So it was good for me for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Now you're back at your alma mater. Is that kind of a full circle moment for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I always wanted to play here growing up. My dad played here. This is always the school that I loved, that I always wanted to be at. So being able to coach or being able to play here and then being able to coach here, at a young age. I mean, I got here, I was 26 years old, and pretty special with unbelievable people. Scott Barry, who was the head coach here for 15 years, one of the best people on planet Earth. I got to coach with him for 2 years, and then Christian Ostrander is the head coach here now. Another just great human being. We spend a lot of time together at the field. We spend a lot of time together off the field as well. Just a great person to be around, and just a great school, a great environment, a great town full of great people.
You obviously have a personal history with the team. Southern Miss has a program history, both with the team and the league. Not only do you tend to send players up here, but you often send two or three down to Ocean State. There's usually one or two going down to the Cape League. What do you expect out of your players when you send them off for a summer baseball playing experience?
It's great for them. One aspect of it is just being able to go get, the reps, being able to go get the innings, get the at bats, get the ground balls, all that kind of stuff. And at the end of the day, that's probably the most important thing. Most of the time, guys that we send off going to play in the summer, maybe weren't everyday starters for us. They might have gotten some ABs, some innings, but we really want to send them off to go get better, to be able to come back and be able to earn a role for the next year. But the second piece to that is definitely just the maturity aspect, the experience aspect. Some guys, they just need to go get away from home. They need to, they've been with mom and dad their whole life, and they get here and they're close enough to home to where it doesn't feel like they're really away yet. And being in Mississippi, sending somebody up to New Hampshire, Vermont for the summer, that's a pretty big gap. That's 24 hours away from home, 25 hours away from home. You can't call mom and dad to come help you do this, to do that. You kind of got to figure it out for your own. And I know from my personal experience, that was a big turning point in my life and my career as I got away from home and I was like, okay, it's time to grow up. It's time to be an adult now and maybe a better baseball player. So that's kind of part of it with them as well.
It seems like in almost all cases, it's only a one-shot deal. Guys go off to Upper Valley or Ocean State or wherever for that summer ball experience. It's going to be a little bit different for one guy this year. You're sending Kyle Culpepper back up here for a second opportunity. Why for his case?
So with Cal, when he came in as a freshman, Cal went to a very, very small high school and was a great competitor, great athlete, all that kind of stuff. but still just had so much mentally he needed to learn and grow with as a freshman, and wasn't really ready to play at our level yet. Was talented enough for sure, but wasn't ready to contribute. And there was a lot of physical, mechanical stuff that we worked really hard to change with him his freshman year. And then sending him up to Upper Valley last summer was like the first time that he got to really put that into action on the field. And so it was like, you know, he's changing the way he moves on the mound, and then he gets to go do it and get better at it. And then he comes back here this fall and was a way better at it and moving the right way, but still just needed more reps and more innings and more reps and more innings. And you know, had a few times out there this year, a few different outings, but still, in the grand scheme of things, as a young kid, a redshirt freshman, and still has a lot to learn and a lot to grow with. And so maybe didn't get as many innings as he wanted to this year, and we felt like, you know, going back up to Upper Valley was a great opportunity. He was successful there last year. Great opportunity to go back up, get his feet wet again, get a bunch of innings, get a bunch of confidence, and come back in the fall ready to earn a role.
Let's get back to you a little bit. And you mentioned your dad being somebody who not only is highly regarded, I guess we could probably say legend in his experience at Southern Mississippi, and obviously a lengthy professional career, one of the Moneyball Athletics. I think he pitched for every team in the AL East over his career. Tell me a little bit about his influence on you, and is he a source of information, I guess, that you can apply in your job as a coach?
So, yeah, all of the above. My dad, my parents got married at 18 years old, fresh out of high school. I'm talking a month after they graduated, they got married and then had me 2 years later. So they were 20 years old whenever I was born. And so now my dad, I'm 30, my dad's 50. And I mean, at this point in time, we're best friends, you know? And so just the relationship there with him being so close in age, he was growing at the same time that I was growing. And he has been a huge influence on my life, not just with baseball, but with in all aspects. And he still is. And you know, in my career, he helped guide me so much and taught me so much whenever I was young, that he was learning at the same time. And it helped me get to where I was at, because I was not a talented baseball player by any means. I just was smart enough to figure out I can do this well. I'm just going to do this every time. And then, and I think that, you know, not trying to be somebody I'm not as a baseball player, it helped me as a coach, because I got to observe everybody else around me without trying to mimic them. And that's kind of something my dad taught me. And you know, he's definitely been a huge influence on my life. And he coaches now. And honestly, if you talk to him, he doesn't feel like he's a great coach. He feels like he's a player who's now coaching. Versus whenever I was playing, I always felt like I was a coach who was playing, if that makes sense.
How would you kind of compare you and your dad's coaching styles? Are they similar, different? Can you take advice from each other?
I would definitely think that I'm probably a lot more patient than he is. So I coach college baseball, he coaches high school baseball, and I think he has to deal with a lot of things that I don't have to deal with 15, 16, 17 year olds, and I'm dealing with 20, 21, 22 year olds. But he, you know, I actually have a little brother who's 15, and so he's coaching my little brother right now in high school and in summer ball and stuff like that. And you know, he's always calling me asking, "What do you think about this? What do you think about that?" You know, like I said, he's 50, very old school. So technology, analytics, even, you know, plyo balls and all this kind of stuff that's new within the past 5 or 10 years, is not passing by. He's trying to learn it, but that's exactly it. He's trying to learn it, you know. So he's always calling me and asking me, "What do you think about this?" He's sending me videos. "What do you think about, you like what this guy's saying?" And so we just kind of bounce things off each other all the time. But he's definitely very, very much old school mentality. You know, if you think the right way and you want it bad enough and you compete hard enough, then you can make it happen.
Yeah, definitely. Could you talk a little bit about what exactly some of the day-to-day tasks are with your role with Southern Miss and kind of some of the things you're doing as a coach?
Yeah, so I work with the pitchers. Our head coach, Christian Ostrander, is pretty widely regarded as, before he became the head coach, one of the best pitching coaches in the country. So I am very, very fortunate to not only play for him for a year, but also to be coaching with him for the last 4 years. He's taught me so much, but I do pretty much everything from a practice standpoint, working with the pitchers down there for bullpens, organizing, setting it up, creating the schedule for them. The hands-on coaching aspect of being in the bullpen with them, working on their pitches, their mechanics, their mentality, their thought process through all of that, what they need to feel, what they need to think, and how they need to operate when they're on the mound. But not only that, from the data and the analytics aspect, like I run our camera system that we have six cameras on the field that captures every game and everything we do. And then it's disseminated to the players. I run all that. I run our TrackMan setup, which is a pitch capturing technology that every pitch that is thrown in the game or in a bullpen, that when we're on the game mound, we're going to capture that. We're going to look at the data behind it, and you'd be amazed. I mean, every single pitch, you've got the spin rate, the movement, the release point, the everything the delivery is doing, everything the pitcher's doing, and we're able to capture all of that and record all that data for them and be able to try to help make them better with that. And then you get to the scouting report aspect, like this whole week leading up to the regional. I mean, I'm watching every hitter for Miami, Alabama, and Columbia, and trying to break down everything they can do and everything they can't do, and trying to figure out how we're going to attack him from a pitching aspect, and just working with Oz with all that kind of stuff has been great. But it can be a lot. There's definitely during the season, there's no such thing as a 40-hour work week for me. It's pretty much 24/7 Monday through Sunday. So it's awesome. It's a lot, but it's awesome.
Yeah, definitely cool seeing all that technology incorporated and how it can impact your game and really give you some more understanding of your playing.
Yeah, it is. And for our program, we have a lot. We're very fortunate, but we try not to take it too far. I know there's programs out there where, I mean, every single thing that the players are doing is being scrutinized. They have motion capture cameras, and every movement they make is being recorded. And I think that's great, but at the end of the day, they're not professionals. They're 21-year-olds, And you can't take the competitive aspect out of the game so much. And so we try to focus on that a lot. We try to spend more time talking about, the like I said earlier, the mentality behind it, and what they need to think and how they need to feel and how hard they need to compete. Because at the end of the day, you're not looking at numbers whenever it's a tied ball game in the eighth inning. You're trying to get that hit, or you're trying to get that guy out. And we know for us, that's the most important thing.
Right.
Now, you mentioned earlier about Cal Culpepper and sending him down here to the Nighthawks. I want to talk a little bit about the second Golden Eagle that's coming to the Nighthawks this summer, Micah Wascom. What can you tell us about his style as a player and kind of how you envision him fitting into the Nighthawks culture?
Mike is awesome. Mike is a freshman from Bogalusa, Louisiana. So he's a good Southern boy. He's going to be, anywhere from that 89, 91, 92 range. He's a strike thrower. Had some moments this year early in the year where he got on the mound and helped us out. But just in the same regard as a lot of other guys that go play summer ball, they just need more innings and more reps, and that's exactly what he needs. Micah, like I said, he's going to come in, he's going to attack, he's not scared, he's going to throw strikes. Great dude, works really, really hard. Tell you what he does for me that I love is he is the best at fixing a mound. So you might need to make sure that they know that up there in Upper Valley, because he is really good at getting that mound just right. So he's kind of my grounds crew for the game mound out here. But he's a good one. I think y'all are gonna like him up there. Quiet guy, but very observant. Knows a lot of useless trivia, so make sure you get with him on that.
We'll have to get him on the podcast.
To break out the Trivial Pursuit. I haven't had a good contest in that since I was in college.
Yeah, no, that's definitely where Micah fits in for sure. He's going to be a good one. I think y'all are going to like him up there.
While we're talking about the guys who are coming, I think we should probably take a moment to look back at some of the ones who have been here, not just the guy we're looking at the screen right now, but so many Southern Miss guys have come through our program and have gone on to do really well getting back into college baseball. You have almost an entire team of them, it seems, available to you. Particularly your starting first baseman, starting second baseman, Matthew Russo, Nick Bonister. Matt Adams pitching so well in the number two position this year. Talk to me a little bit about how they've evolved since their experiences in summer ball.
Well, I mean, just trying to go around the horn a little bit. I mean, some of those guys just, they get here as freshmen, and you just know, you just see it as they grow and as they get older and more experienced, you know how good they could possibly be. Russo, one of those guys, just a team chemistry glue guy. The crowd loves him. The community loves him. Team loves him. I mean, he's on the leadership council of our team, and he is a great leader, a great competitor, and has worked his butt off to be what he is today. Obviously a talented guy, but came in and knew that it was going to be a few years before he was able to get on the field, and he was okay with that. Really worked really hard to change his swing. Worked really hard to get his body, you know, in a good playing, good playing weight, and be athletic and be able to move around over there at first base. And smart guy, and has really, really taken off. Obviously had a breakout year this year. And then, Nick, just when Nick stepped on campus, you just knew that he was going to be a superstar. You didn't know what he was going to do because he pitched a little bit as a freshman and even as a sophomore, and then got an opportunity to play second base about halfway through his freshman year. Never looked back. I think he might have started every single game since that weekend at Old Dominion. But Nick is the ultimate competitor, and I think he's going to be rewarded for that, you know, not just this year, but maybe in the draft in July. And obviously Sunbelt Player of the Year. Just he's the guy that you want up in the big moment. He has that slow heartbeat and that competitive nature where he believes every single time he's at the plate that he is going to win the game for us. And he has many, many times. I think he went back-to-back weeks where he either hit a go-ahead homer or a walk-off homer about midway through the season and just hasn't looked back. I mean, he's been awesome. I think that summer up there in Upper Valley was a big turning point for him because he got to go up there, get away from home, and just figure some stuff out on his own, come back and get a lot better because of that. And then Matt Adams is just salt of the earth, one of the best dudes you're ever going to meet, and one of the hardest workers. And I know from my perspective, working with the pitchers and working with him every day for the last 4 years, Matt had a pretty real, pretty brutal surgery about 2 years ago. I had something very similar. He tore his labrum in his shoulder. And where pitchers are concerned, the elbow's not that hard to come back from. It takes a long time, but you can come back from an elbow. A shoulder injury to a pitcher is usually the end. It's really hard to get the mobility back. And I've never seen anybody work harder than he's worked to get back and to be who he is. And he has exceeded all expectations coming back. And it's a tribute to him as a human being. And he's right where he needs to be, and he's doing exactly what he needs to do. And he's obviously been rewarded for that. And he is he's the heart and soul of our pitching staff and our team. I mean, there's obviously guys with more innings and more, you know, ABs and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, he is the ultimate catalyst for Southern Miss and what our program is.
Well, a couple of other things we're going to throw out, Aaron. I'm going to shut up for a little bit and let these two take care of it. Don't want to forget Chase Adams, another former Nighthawk who's coming back from arm surgery. Hope to see him next year. I wanted to make an aside on Matthew Russo from watching last night's broadcast. The two broadcasters have a serious bromance going on for Matthew. And it really it kind of got almost sublime toward the end of the contest when Matthew took the pitch off his arm that hit him in the crown of his helmet. It didn't look very good at that time, but obviously he got checked out, came back into the game, and then the first pitch thrown to him in his next at bat after being checked out for a concussion hits him square in the back. Southern Miss fans, I think it's safe to say, can get very angry at provocations or what they perceive to be provocations. But here's Matt. He gets it right in the back. He's just walking down first base. His palms are down to the ground, trying to tell everybody, calm down. It's not a big deal. It wasn't intentional. You don't see that from people very often, not at the major league level, certainly. And to see Matthew, and he apparently prefers to be called Matthew, do that really impressed me, showed me how much he has grown as a person. He was pretty mature when he came up here, but even more so now.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. And that moment, that scenario, obviously, I think that pitcher was feeling it a little bit from our crowd and our fans after he hit him. Very lucky, though. I think that ball, like you said, glanced off his shoulder. and then kind of hit him in the cheek, and it wasn't like a direct impact hit. So he's fine. He's all good. Might be a little sore, but he's all good. But yeah, that then the next day, I don't know if the camera showed it, but that coach actually who called the pitch was trying to tell his catcher, get into the left-hander's batter box or the right-hander's batter box. Get as far away from Russo as you can for this breaking ball. And that pitcher was just so, in his own head that all he could see, all he could think about up there was not hitting Russo. And then when he did, our crowd let him have it. But it definitely wasn't intentional. If you're ever going to hit anybody, which doesn't really happen in today's game, you're never trying to hit anybody. But if you are, you're not going to throw a curveball and try to hit them. You're going to try to hit him with a fastball. So it definitely wasn't intentional. Russo knew that. And knew that the guy on the mound was feeling the heat for sure, and just trying to, our fans had been out here for about 12 hours at that point in time. Probably a few alcoholic drinks in their system as well. So he was trying to just kind of get them to cool off a little bit, because the guy on the mound wasn't in a good place, I can promise you that.
Yeah, there was probably more than a few relaxed folks out in right field,
Yeah.
kind of taking
Oh,
that
yeah.
in last night. Yeah. But it's good to
No,
see
no
Matthew
doubt.
recover from that very quickly.
No, he's gonna be good. He'll be back out there today.
Good.
I don't know if you guys can tell, but Greg is our resident Southern Miss fan.
Oh, he knows. He knows. I mean, we take vacations occasionally, my wife and I do, to try to catch up with some of the guys who stayed with us in the past. And we've it just by coincidence have hosted all of the Southern Miss players who've come up here since Keller back in 2017. Uniformly, they are wonderful guys. They are really neat to have around. And being from the South, which is an area where I don't have a whole lot of experience, you get a good idea of how differently young men, and when we meet their girlfriends, young ladies, are brought up in that part of the country. And it's fascinating to see how they are. It's been a wonderful experience all the way around, to the point where my wife and I jokingly refer to ourselves as the Northern New England branch of the Southern Miss Baseball Fan Club. Fortunately, we were able to swing some time, go down. We saw Keller, we saw all the other guys down at a series at Appalachian State. And I believe it should be called Appalachian State, but that's just me. About a month ago. So Keller and I have
Hey,
talked.
y'all are our good luck charm, because we went on a heater right after that. We swept
Yeah.
that series and kept winning.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, there's no excuse for us not to see you guys at some point.
Right.
And I know they've already said that, and I don't know if it's confirmed yet. James Madison is on the schedule next year.
I'm pretty sure, yeah, I'm pretty sure we go up there next year. We may also go to ODU, I'm not sure. I honestly, our conference schedule comes out pretty late. They probably have sent it out. I don't know if I've seen it yet. We usually have to do our non-conference pretty early. Like, I think our non-conference schedule for 26, 27 are already done. So we're just kind of waiting on the conference schedule. So I'm pretty sure we do go to James Madison next year. I think you're
So
right.
I really appreciate the effort they take to try to get as close to Northern New England as
Yeah.
possible during the college
Just
baseball
for
season.
you, of
Just for
course.
me,
Yeah.
yeah. Because knowing that I've got family in D.C. and JMU is probably a 2, 2.5 hour drive from D.C., piece of cake. So now I'm just trying to get them north of the Mason-Dixon line. And I hopefully will be able to do that before I retire.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep. No doubt about it. No, you've had some good ones. Hey, Luke Reynolds, Matthew Guidry, Bryant Bowen, you've had some good ones up there for sure. I think most of those guys were in the stands these last few days coming to support their alma mater. So it's been a fun weekend for sure.
Is it fair to make a direct Guidry to Monastir comparison? They seem one seems to remind me of the other quite a bit, actually.
Well, both good players for sure. Definitely different skill sets. Monastir is more of a twitchy athlete who's got the ability to run a little bit. Which Guidry could not do. Monastir is going to swing. He's going to swing the bat. Like Monastir, he's not afraid to chase a pitch outside the zone. Guidry wasn't going to do that. But when it comes to production, yeah, they're both pretty impressive baseball players. And we've had a pretty good string of pretty good second basemen here. So we've been very fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, for the record, Matt was with Keller in 2017 up here and went back to Southern Miss, captained the team for 2 years, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
A very, very solid defensive player, very solid batter, and obviously, if he's captaining for 2 years, a leader as well. So him and Luke and Keller got the habit started up here, and it continues this season.
That's one thing that I will say is special about this team. We've had some good teams here the last few years I've been here, but The thing that reminds me so much of those good teams in 2017, 2018 that I played on is that offense. And Guidry was he was the one who did this, and now it's Russo that does it now. Bring about the fourth or fifth inning if we're ever struggling, bringing all those hitters together and letting them know, this is what the pitcher's trying to do to us. This is how he's going to attack us. This is what we do to counteract that. This is what our thought process needs to be. This is how hard we need to compete. And we need to go. We need to do this right now. And Russo does a great job of that. Guidry did a great job of that back in the day. And that's a pretty special aspect that you don't see with a lot of teams. Most of the time, it's ho-hum. You go through, you hit, it's whatever. Hopefully, a big hit happens. But these guys kind of they take control of their own destiny, which is pretty special.
Well, Keller, we can't let you leave without asking you, what makes the Upper Valley Nighthawks special?
That is, I would say that Greg Fennell is the number one. That he makes it more special than anybody. No, to me, it was the homey feel and the environment being up there, and just felt it didn't feel forced. It felt natural. You're up there, you're playing. Everybody up there is just great people in that area of the country, and you feel comfortable there. You have fun going to the ballpark every day. The food ain't bad either. The
Have you
maple
tried the
creamies are
maple
good. Yes, so good.
creamies?
Four Aces Diner was my favorite place.
That's
I
what brought
get
him
to
back
day
to
there
coach
every
in
single morning.
2019.
Yes. But no, it's definitely it feel it felt like home. Like I went up there in 2017 and loved it so much. I had to go back for another summer, and I do it again. It feels. It felt right to be up there. It felt like home. It was very comfortable up there. And that's one thing, whenever you go off to a different place to go play summer ball, it's not easy to recreate that. Most people just feel outside their element. But I think you go up there and play in Upper Valley, you don't feel that at all.
Well, you are always welcome back, and except in the months of June and July, and
Yeah.
Especially if you get the itch to try mogul skiing, come on up. I
Oh.
can't go through it with you, but I don't have the knees for it, but
Right.
give it a shot
But
sometime.
yeah, I might have to. Might have to for sure. So, well, awesome.
Well, Keller, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today. We really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us and share a little bit more about the Golden Eagles coming to the Upper Valley and your experience with the Nighthawks. We wish you luck with the rest of the NCAA tournament, starting with your game tonight against Miami. And we hope to hear from you again on the podcast soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys so much. Hope you all are tuning in tonight. It's gonna be a late one for y'all. It's 8 o'clock here, so 9 o'clock there. So, Greg, you might already be in bed, but
Yeah,
that's
I'm contemplating a nap at some point during the day, so yeah,
That's right. You
we'll
need
be
to go
there.
nap
One of
in
the
the middle of the
first
day so you can stay up late.
one of the first things Greg says as he walks in was he might have to take a nap so he
Yeah,
can stay
yeah.
up for the game.
Old age has its benefits, but it also has its detriments, and that's one of them.
No, that's awesome. It's gonna be a good one tonight. It's gonna be fun. This place is gonna be packed out. Obviously with it's hard. We gotta win tonight. That's the most important thing. But the possibility of winning tonight and then hosting a super regional is pretty exciting. But you gotta take it one game at a time, one pitch at a time, one inning at a time. And I know that our guys are ready for the challenge for sure.
Yes, thanks, Matt.
Thank you again, Matt Paws, for joining us on the podcast for the second time this season. Now, last season, the Navigators were a part of the Coastal Division along with the Newport Gulls, the Schooners, the Sharks, and the Ocean State Waves. But this season, the NECBL has decided to move away from that three-division setup in favor of a two-division setup. They have the North and the South divisions, North having six teams, South having seven. Now, Greg, since you have seen that three division play, what are your thoughts on this switch to a two division play?
I think it's a good idea because what it does is it's getting more teams concentrated into a geographic area. You're going to get more games against those teams, hence, you're going to have fewer hideously long road trips. Guys who come up here are actually kind of surprised how short the road trips are compared to what they're used to in college. They might have a 6, 8, 10 hour bus drive. Here, the longest trip is 3.5, maybe 4 hours by bus. The trip to Martha's Vineyard will be unique. Enjoy it. Have a great time because
Oh.
you'll take the bus down to Woods Hole, I think Woods Hole, Mass, and take a ferry over. So
I know we just got the schedule of the time we have to arrive at the field, and it's like 6 hours, and it's 6 hours from leaving the field to getting on the ferry, and then you still have to go. So,
yeah, and did they? I don't know if they told you about the trip back yet. You have to get on a charter because the ferry stops running around 8:30.
Oh, lovely.
So anyway, enjoy. I hope you have a good time. But as for the two division setup, now we get North Adams back. That's a 2-hour trip. I love going down to North Adams. Beautiful place to see a ball game. Let's see. I think everybody else who's in the North has been in the North, so it's teams that you're normally used to seeing. I like the notion of playing, you know, what, 4, 5, 6 games against Vermont, Sanford, where the trips are going to be reasonable. Okay. Going down to Lynn, 2 hours. Going to Sanford, 2 hours. All back roads, but still 2 hours. Vermont is 60 minutes. Keene is 75 minutes. 2 hours to North Adams. So it may sound like, for those of you who have to take the bus, it may sound like it's a long day, but it's actually not that bad compared to going 3.5 to Newport or 6 to Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely bring up a good point about how it affects just the regular season. I want to talk a little bit about how it's going to affect the playoffs, and obviously we can get more into that when playoffs start getting closer. But essentially, this means that the top four teams with the best winning percentage from the North Division and the South Division will compete in the opening round of the playoffs. So that means for the Nighthawks, if they want to be able to compete in the playoffs this year, they have to end the regular season having the top four best winning percentage just among those six teams in the North. Maybe gives them a slight advantage than over the South because there's less teams within that division, less teams you have to have a better winning percentage against.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely an interesting aspect to how that's going to affect the playoff structure. But again, that's something we can get into closer to the end of the season. But so first game against North Shore Navigators, then they're headed to Keene to take on the Swamp Bats, which, Caitlin, that's actually your hometown. Now, I know you haven't been away that long, but are you excited to go back home?
Yeah, so I live about 30 minutes outside of Keene. So that's kind of the nearest, like, city, if you would even call Keene a city to me. So I will be gone not even a week before I'm going back. So it'll be nice. My mom's coming to the game, so I'll get to see her. And I don't ever remember going to a Swamp Bats game growing up, which is crazy because I live so close to them. But apparently, I did ask my mom. I've been to one in my life. I just don't remember it. But I have heard from, you know, local people around that the Swamp Bats is a really, really good culture. They have a lot of volunteers. It sounds like they have some pretty good food there, too, which we'll have to try. And, yeah, it's right in kind of the Keene High School backyard pretty much of the
the missus likes it. We tend to it's the easiest road trip for us, and usually what we end up doing is just bringing our lawn chairs, going down the left field line, staying behind the out of bounds line, and waving to all the pitchers as they walk from the dugout down to the bullpen. We had great conversations with our guys last year. I think Keene is the team that everybody else in the NECBL wants to be, from an organizational standpoint. Newport also the same way. They set an excellent standard from the start. They've been there almost the entire history of the league. They do things well, and they make people want to be out there. And the baseball is usually good. On top of that, Keene is one of those wackadoodle fields in terms of dimensions. 425 down the right field line, just because that's the way the fence is. But you get to the power alleys, and it's maybe 350, 360. It's strange, very strange. But for college baseball players, especially right-handed hitters at Alumni Field, they're probably drooling as they go up to the plate. Just groove one for me, and I'll just bunt it over the fence. That's about what it gets to be sometimes. But we've also seen some players make some fantastic defensive plays up against that fence. I remember a kid, I think he was from Georgia, University of Georgia, playing for Keene a couple of years ago, made a fantastic leaping catch against the fence in left field. So you tend to get high scoring games there, and you tend to get a fair number of home runs. Hint to those who've never been there before: park as far away from the fence as possible, or else have a very good auto insurance agent.
Oh no!
Yeah, I can imagine more than a few cars have been dented by home runs over the years there.
Good to know. Good advice, viewers, if you're heading to that game.
I noticed your wife was saying that they have salads at Alumni Field.
Okay. They have salads? I've missed that. I'm so used to eating sausage and onions all the time.
Okay.
Okay, well, there you go.
I think that Phoebe and I should do, like, a food series of all the games. Because everyone is telling us we need to try maple creamies.
Yes.
So there should be something at every field that we try, and we should do a little series of that. So,
I think it's a great idea. I'll put a couple of bugs in your ear, okay?
Okay.
We've made the trip to Mystic. It's been, like, 9 or 10 years since we did it, but it's still at the same high school. The time we went, they had a portable pizza oven there.
Ooh.
So if they have that again, fantastic. And Vermont, they haven't done it quite as much lately, but a couple of times we've been there, and there's been a truck that sold poutine. Now, are you familiar with what that is?
I am. Yes.
Okay. And it's quite good, very salty, but it is quite good.
I mean, who doesn't love salt?
Well, you get to be 62, and I'll tell you that you may want to get away from it a little bit. But yeah, if you've never had French fries with gravy and cheese curds before, it's a huge Quebec thing that has really started to filter its way down here in the past 10, 15, 20 years. So those are the two that I would say watch out for if you want to do a food series, because I think it'd be a cool idea.
Yeah.
I think it would be really fun. I want to try a New England lobster roll.
Yes. You've never had a lobster roll before?
I have in Baltimore. It's
okay, but you need a New England one.
What?
Guys, I'm kind of a lobster snob. Yeah. So I'm I need my lobster roll specifically.
I gotta relate a story then, especially since my wife is here. Back in, I forget what year it was. I think it was 97. Was that our technical honeymoon, I believe it was? Yeah, okay. We took 10 days and drove up the Pacific Coast Highway from San Francisco to Oregon back down the Central Valley. One day, we had to go down to Monterey because I wanted to walk around Pebble Beach. And at the end of the day, we went to downtown Monterey, found a restaurant, and decided to have dinner. What does my wife order on the as far away from New Hampshire as you could possibly get for dinner? Not only did she order a lobster, it had been flown in from Maine that day.
No.
And it was probably less expensive than anything else that was offered on the menu at the time. So we go 3,000 miles to the opposite coast, and she eats what she could have had here and probably paid more for here.
Yeah. It was less expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, go figure. So.
Well, what always stresses me out is some gas stations near me sell lobster rolls.
Ooh.
And I don't know who is eating a lobster.
It's kind of like gas station sushi. I wouldn't recommend that at all.
No, so.
Although I have heard in Hawaii, the 7-Elevens have sushi rolls, handheld rolls, and they're actually decent.
You know, I actually have tried one of those, and it was pretty good. Yeah, because I feel like I was getting a lot of videos of people saying oh, you should try this.
I did.
And it was fine.
So, I mean, updating the bucket list, maple creamies.
Yes.
Which actually, my mom just told me Elliot in the morning was talking about Vermont maple creamies this morning.
Yeah. A lot of places you can get them right here.
Mm-hmm.
So, got to try that.
Pizza from Mystic. Pizza.
Yeah, let's hope they have that.
Poutine from Vermont.
Yes.
I'm starting a list. Yeah. So, guys, if you want to see this, let us know. We'll do a series, maybe on the Instagram, because we can't really bring the food onto the studio unless it's days old.
I mean, the nice thing around here is that you do tend to see food trucks at a lot of these places. I mean, Upper Valley will bring one in pretty much every game. I was down at Danbury, tried to see a game at Danbury before storms got in the way. Last year, and they had a couple of food trucks there. I haven't been to Bristol yet. Nice stadium there, by the way. I'm sure they have a nice arrangement there. And I can't imagine what you're going to find on